The Money Show.
Business Unusual with Colin Cullis.
Never in Business Unusual. We cover a lot of things, Colin Cullis. I mean, you tell us stories every week and it's this frenzied pace of new innovation and people with brilliant ideas. Sometimes, if you don't mind, it's good just to go, let's breathe and review. Can we breathe and review? Because had the DA done that today, they might still have a political party. But they didn't. They didn't breathe. We need to breathe.
Indeed. And I did a rough count, and there's in excess of 150. So that's a lot of calls about things that would happen, wouldn't happen, or how they would happen, which potentially we could just as easily get wrong as right. And it's useful sometimes to go back and say, well, whatever did happen to ... for a variety of reasons. I'll kick off with this one, the meat alternatives. So back in May, one of those meat startups called Beyond Meat listed. That was a reason for us to go and say, okay, what happens with these guys? They listed at $66. Through to July, they reached a peak of $234, and they're back at around the $100 mark, in part because at the end of this month they finish their lockup period, so all of those original owners, investors, can now sell off that those shares and cash in on all of the stuff. The win for the experiment: a lot of fast food chains have been saying, well, let's test this out, and if consumers like it, then we can claim this has been, we're doing good things for the environment, and hopefully at some point they'll make it cheap and we can sell a lot more of the stuff. And the likes of Burger King and McDonald's and even Kentucky, quite a few retail chains in the US have not only tested it, they've actually gone and said, we don't have to test this anymore. It worked. We're rolling it out nationally and internationally. And even here in South Africa, you can start seeing them popping up. I think Woolworths sells them. A couple of the restaurants sell them. And you can
nosh them. We've got a restaurant across the road from our Joburg studios that sells the stuff. I mean, it's becoming more and more common. And from a price point perspective, maybe a bit more expensive than meat, but, you know, it becomes down to choice of if you can afford it, of course, in terms of sustainable food sources and making different choices. And these companies are enabling us to do so.
Yeah, I mean, we've been working on getting meat to an affordable price for 12,000 years. The Beyond Meat and Impossible Food guys have had about 10. So I think we can cut them a bit of slack on that one. And then a subject I never thought we'd cover, but back in August, there was this notion of an explosion in Russia that had a nuclear fallout attached to it. And the Chernobyl series had just gone, and people were quite concerned about it. And then there was these stories of the doomsday weapon arsenals that America and Russia are busy developing, which was quite frightening. Well, we got a little update just this week to say that the actual explosion was because the Russians were trying to retrieve one of those doomsday weapons called the Skyfall nuclear cruise missile that they lost a year ago. It landed in the ocean. They weren't 100% sure where it was, but it's a nuclear missile right near populated areas. And the actual attempt to try and retrieve it had dislodged some things. It obviously wasn't all that good from being in the ocean for that period of time, and it exploded. I don't think it was necessarily nuclear. There was nuclear material in it. The explosion was a conventional explosion. But still, they tried to cover it up. They tried to say it wasn't that, and now we know that it was. Concerning because we're growing new kinds of arsenal that can do a lot more damage. And the world is getting a little more angry and sometimes willing to, well, just recent sort of situations that developed in Syria, people with alliances and undertakings to do certain things, well, they're sort of, okay, I'm out of here, somebody else take over. And, you know, the shifting sands of who will help who under certain circumstances with these sorts of weapons could be very, very problematic. But here's one where humanity has sort of raised its flag every time a government thought, oh, there's a good idea. We covered last year protests in Uganda that involved taxation, digital taxation, specifically trying to get taxes for people using social media and also for digital transactions. And there was mass protests, and the Ugandan government effectively had to first reduce the numbers down and then finally remove it from effectively a WhatsApp tax. And we kind of figured, well, other countries are probably going to look to try and levy something there, particularly ones that are in need of cash. So who's going to do it next? How are they going to do it? And will they be able to do it successfully? Well, just this last week, well, for the last couple of months, I suppose you could argue, Lebanon has been seeing increasing amounts of unhappiness with the way the government has been operating, and they're rising debt levels, and in the last week, a range of taxes were sought to be reintroduced or elevated for things like VAT and fuel, etc., and on voice calling via systems like WhatsApp, which led to protests.
It's so interesting, isn't it? I mean, these things which are supposedly the great democratization of communication, now governments are looking to seek to capitalize on, because as you remove government's earning capacity, it's got to find creative new ways of levering money out of your pocket.
Yeah, and with so many people using it, and to the extent that they're using it, it's got to be a very tempting thing for government to say, oh, can't I just take a couple of cents from all of those little transactions going on? But it did also lead to that rather surreal moment with protesters in a busy street in Beirut and a mom with a young child in the car trying to get through the traffic and asking them, please, you're upsetting my son, which saw this crazy viral sensation created for a bunch of protesters chanting against the government, switching mode and singing Baby Shark just to put the little guy at ease.
I mean, it is possibly the loveliest thing I've seen online ever. This poor kid is completely freaked out and stressed out, and we know what it's like. South African protests can get very hairy and exciting, and I would love to see the same sort of mindfulness of protesters understanding that there is, you know, you're angry at a system, you're angry at, and you're protesting, and you're perfectly entitled to do so. But when a kid's involved and when you're freaking out a kid, just, you know, a little bit of Baby Shark goes a long way.
That's what we need. And then a little earlier this year, in April, in fact, the president, President Ramaphosa, was having a Twitter Q&A. That alone just seems bizarre that we're discussing things about the president having Twitter Q&As. But in a reply to somebody that asked him about coding, he said he would like to see compulsory coding in South African schools. Now, not a whole lot has happened in that regard, but at least the undertakings or the sort of frameworks for that being introduced has taken a step forward, with the Department of Education looking to add it to those streams that will now be created after the grade nines get to choose sort of how they're going to do their final years at school. The worry there is grade nine is kind of late in the day for you to start getting into coding. But that's at least a little better than this week's performance by our deputy president when being asked about his industrial revolution.
But it's not the first time. It's not the first time that David Mabuza has been challenged in Parliament about the fourth industrial revolution. You would have thought after last time's embarrassment, he would have gone and just somebody could have Googled for him and could have told him what it's all about.
But appears it didn't.
And then we need to talk to the SARS commissioner is holding on.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Well, so I've got other ones on Facebook, WeWork, which is really gone crazy.
I want to talk about MoviePass, please, because this was a balmy idea. This idea that you could go and it became a bit like a gym membership, a bit like a Ponzi scheme, I think, and it didn't work.
Yeah, this is the crazy part that disruptive companies think scale at all costs. Don't worry about not making money. We'll sort it out later. And as long as there's a ridiculous venture capitalist with deep pockets, we'll survive. So they offered moviegoers a very cheap pass to go and watch any movie they wanted at like $10 for the subscription to go and watch a $12, $15 movie. And you can go multiple times. People signed up in their droves because it was a great deal and they were burning through cash. They had no plan for a way of turning this to be profitable. They then thought, well, let's try and do like Netflix, and besides giving the subscriptions, let's start commissioning some movies, and effectively they just burned through all of their cash. They finally said, we are in a service disruption on the 14th of September. And they've been that way since the 14th of September with very, very little chance of them coming back. However, cinemas have realized there is something to the subscription model to get people repeatedly coming back, certainly to your cinemas. So a small little glimmer of hope there. But one that Wendy Nolan no doubt would be able to have a look at is MoviePass is still debiting some people's accounts.
No.
Despite not giving them anything. So yes, everybody needs the ninjas in the thing. And if I could mention,
we're going to set our ninja on them. WeWork, I mean, the SARS commission has disappeared. So WeWork is another one. And the old Discovery building in Sandton is being converted to a WeWork center. I think the work is still continuing there because they're in a partnership with some local players. And the WeWork phenomenon, lovely idea. But massively overpriced and overextended. And they've had to pay the CEO, the founder, to go away.
Pretty much. So the idea was worthwhile, and hopefully they will still resurrect or use some parts of it. But this is, again, a crazy notion of trying to call yourself a disruptive technology business when you're an office rental company, when you've got a very unconventional CEO who is doing all sorts of weird deals that certainly from an investor point of view that says, well, I'm investing in your company because I expect to see a return, rather than, and again, there's invariably a business unusual coming on SoftBank and their founder for some of the crazy deals they go and do, but that's kind of what it is. And they've had to take over 80% of the company. This valuation has fallen from sort of 48 billion, which was kind of crazy. It's now at 8, which I think is still kind of crazy. They've got huge liabilities for all this office rental space that they've effectively have to pay for 10, 15 years. But they don't necessarily know that they're going to have people willing to fill them. So that one and the movie pass are this scale at all costs things, which I think age of disruption is over. Time to get back to more regular business. If you're not making a profit, you're not making sense, will probably start being the order of the day. But I do also have two that are really like phenomenally good. They turned out better than we even thought.
Okay, go.
One was quantum computing, which, you know, was kind of crazy. It's still a mind-bending sort of experimental kind of computing. But just recently, Google, who built themselves this enormous 54-qubit computer, which I know doesn't mean anything to anybody, it's a very large one, said they managed to run a calculation that would have taken a regular computer 10,000 years to do in under 4 minutes. Which is astounding. Yes. IBM, not liking that, they said, oh, we contest that. You definitely wouldn't need to take 10,000 years to do it. And they came back and they said it would take 2.5 days with the world's most powerful supercomputer to be able to do it right now. In which case, 2.5 days versus 4 minutes, you still got a significant speed improvement. What exactly and how they're going to start applying these things are eye-wateringly difficult to build and expensive. But the power of the processing that is coming, potentially if you start adding the AIs and everything else, could be very useful. But the one channel that has created a game changer for everybody is YouTube. And it's not YouTube itself that we all wind up watching this stuff, the world's second largest, most popular search engine. It's the people on it who've managed to build a business for themselves. So PewDiePie, a gamer who basically just talks and says whatever he wants and plays games and earns a fabulous amount of money from that. He has over 100 million subscribers and obviously millions and millions of views. But it's that 7-year-old we discussed about a year ago called Ryan who really took the cake. He was then the world's highest paid YouTuber. He remains so. Back in last year when I mentioned him to you, this is the guy who does toy reviews. He has hundreds and hundreds of videos that he puts out. He gets about 1 million views of them within 24 hours. But back then I said he was earning 100 million rand in 1 year.
Oh, no, he's not.
Ryan, as of 2018, not the 2019 figures, they haven't come out. In 2018, Ryan and his family earned 324 million rand for playing with toys.
If Ryan needs to be adopted, I think there's probably a queue. Got a business unusual.